Welcome in, podcast listeners. Loaded show coming your way. But first, remember, go out and rate the podcast. Outkick the coverage. Outkick the show. Wins and losses. Special Sunday edition of Wins and Losses dropping. Joel Klatt getting you ready for college football season. If you're a college football fan, you'll love it. This week's edition of Wins and Losses, Jeff Fisher feedback was phenomenal. Make sure you subscribe and rate that podcast. Podcast exclusive, Wins and Losses. Today's show, Friday edition. Happy weekend for you. Jason Whitlock swings by, and we talk with Jason Martin. Danny G and I break down the DeMarcus Cousins injury. We get you ready with all five of the NFL preseason games that were going on last night. How nervous should Arizona Cardinals fans be about Kyler Murray's performance? All that and more. It's Outkick the Coverage, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, normal live on Fox Sports Radio. But you podcast listeners, you get all of it right now, live. Enjoy.
Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis, live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Live from the Geico Outkick Studios, and rejoice, even though it's not real kind of full football, we've got something that I think is kind of intriguing, and that is five different NFL football games that were going on last night in the preseason. What did we learn, if anything? Let's start with what I think is the biggest story that's out there, and that is Kyler Murray, right? He's the only rookie quarterback that's probably likely to start early in the season. The Cardinals have built their entire universe around Kyler Murray, around Cliff Kingsbury, around this new offensive system that they're trying to put in that is supposedly going to be so incredible to watch. And you know what it wasn't incredible to see? To watch last night. The Raiders, as much as it pains me to admit it, the Raiders under John Gruden came out and they dominated. Now, I want to say this. I always enjoy NFL preseason because it often leads football-starved and crazed fans to draw totally irrational conclusions based on a very limited data set and based on a very limited sample size that isn't at all representative of what the actual season is going to be like. That's the great flaw of preseason football in general in the NFL, is that it's almost impossible to learn anything based on what occurs in a preseason football game. You know what's coming now, right? Because I just said you can't learn anything. Having said all that, Kyler Murray was awful. I mean atrocious against the Raiders last night. He was so bad. There was no real flow or rhythm to the offense in place at all. He looked small. He looked overwhelmed. He looked hampered. He looked unable to move the football at all. The Raiders completely went out and dominated him. And it wasn't like he only took a few snaps. The Cardinals left him in for a lot of this football game, trying to get some, I think, self-confidence built up in him. So as much as it pains me to do it, the number one fan of the Raiders on the planet is Danny G. He has been out here singing the praises of Antonio Brown, even though that man became the first person in recorded history to get frostbite in France in July, in the hottest month in the history of the country. And he's not playing. We have no idea what's going on with Antonio Brown, although we'll have to wait for Hard Knocks to find out for sure.
He was suited up last night.
Yeah.
That's pretty good for having CTE, that he's able to put his uniform on.
Credit to Antonio Brown for figuring out how to put on his helmet.
Roberto, cue the Raiders music, please.
Stop with the Raiders music.
The headline should be, Clay, and I know you say you can't learn that much from preseason, and you're absolutely right about that, but the Raiders sucked last preseason. They look 100 times better as a team. Now, is that going to translate to the regular season? Who knows? You know they have a really tough schedule. They travel more than any other team in the league, and Gruden's trying to get everyone on the same page. He's got tons of new pieces, parts, new players, so it's going to take a little bit for that team to gel.
I know you want to talk about the Raiders. The story here is
Well, the Raiders made Kyler Murray look bad. Yesterday morning, when we were getting ready to do post-production, Roberto told me, he was like, man, I'm hyped for the Raider game tonight because I think Kyler Murray might struggle against the Raiders starting defense. Not only did he struggle against the Raiders starters, he struggled against the Raiders second string defenders.
He was awful. I mean, I don't think there's any other way to put it. Now, there have been a lot of good quarterbacks in the NFL who were awful early in their preseason performances. But what was unique about this is they let him get a lot of snaps, and he wasn't good in hardly any of them, right? And I don't know whether it's fair to draw any conclusions. In fact, I'm fairly confident that it is not. But when you get such a limited opportunity to especially look at young quarterbacks, we're going to oversample and overanalyze everything they do. In fact, remember how Daniel Jones was the most criticized first-round quarterback pick and first-round pick in general in the April NFL draft? And then what did he do? He came out and he was really good with the Giants in their first preseason game, and everybody said, hey, you know what? Maybe we didn't necessarily make the wrong decision. Maybe the Giants got a really good quarterback. And so just based on entirely that performance, and then a lot of other people who had been big fans of the Dwayne Haskins career at Ohio State, and they wanted him to be the pick. Well, then Dwayne Haskins goes out, and he throws two interceptions in his first start, first action with the Redskins. He didn't start, but then guess what happens? Dwayne Haskins comes back in his second game last night playing against the Bengals, and he's not bad at all. And so I think it's hard a lot of times to draw any major conclusion. Kyler Murray looked pretty decent in week one, but he couldn't have looked any worse than he did last night. So where is the rubric here? How fair is it to assess his performance and kind of look at it, given that he played basically a pretty substantial number of snaps last night against the Raiders, and it didn't matter how many snaps he took, there weren't very many good plays.
Well, I think it's fair to say that the Raiders don't have very many lazy players on their team right now. The Raiders have a ton of hungry dogs. We saw Gruden and everyone knocking on wood. There's tons of guys on that team that are trying to not only maybe make the team, but also prove that they can play well this season. Because what have we heard so far, especially on TV and on radio? Oh, the Raiders are interesting, but they're not going to be good. They're not going to be good at all. Do we know that for sure? Yeah, I'm biased because I'm a Raiders fan, but we don't
any
know
NFL team.
Yeah, I mean, and so we don't know about Kyler Murray yet either. Who knows? In preseason week three, he could come out gangbusters and look similar to he did in week one. Then everybody will stop on a dime and turn around again and be like, whoa, maybe we shouldn't have said all those negative things about him just because of one preseason performance. So no, just because he struggled last night, that doesn't mean he's a bust. Let's stop. It's just like how Daniel Jones had the one great week one game, and then all of a sudden there's going to be so much overreaction that no, we can't judge things just based on preseason. That's ridiculous.
Here's what I would say in general. We know based on preseason that there's not a lot of game planning and scheming that goes into the defense. If you are a rookie quarterback and you can't have offensive success against a defense that is not game planning to stop you at all, doesn't that make you just a little bit nervous if you are an Arizona Cardinals fan about what might happen when they are actually game planning and trying to stop you? That's all I'll say. I'm excited to watch Kyler Murray, and I'm curious to see how everything's going to go with Cliff Kingsbury.
Yeah,
they
what's
got
your
an
grade?
F last night.
Oh, wow. So they get an F. How about Derek Carr? What was it last week when you were still on vacation? Jeff Schwartz called him a goober the whole week. He came out smoking. Josh Jacobs had his debut. He looked really good, too. So do you think that Carr and Jacobs, with all the new talent at wide receiver, do you think the Raiders offense has a chance of being prolific?
I look, if Derek Carr plays like he did during what was nearly an MVP season before he broke his leg, we know that his ceiling is high. I'm a big believer in even Nick Foles, right? Nick Foles had one of the statistically greatest full seasons ever when he was a quarterback for the Eagles with Chip Kelly. And so we knew, I'm not talking about one game, I'm not talking about one month. I believe if you can consistently string together good games, double-digit games, your ceiling is high. Whether you can replicate it is unclear, but your ceiling can be high. Derek Carr's ceiling can be high. Can he replicate or string together a long series of good games? I have no idea, but he's done it before, so it doesn't shock me when anybody has done something before and they do it again. There's an easy analogy here. If you are a weightlifter and you have bench pressed, let's say, 300 pounds before, and then you get really out of shape and you get fat and you don't go into the gym for 2 years, I still believe that you can come back and bench press 300 pounds once more because you've done it. I'd rather bet on the guy who I know has already done something than the guy who hasn't. I just think that's an easy decision to make. So I think there's reason for optimism, yeah. This is OutKick. We come back. My boy Jason Whitlock going to hang with us a little bit. At Whitlock Jason, we're going to dive into this Jay-Z NFL deal and more. That's OutKick. Thanks for hanging with us. Great Friday here on Fox Sports Radio.
This is OutKick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico OutKick Studios. Bring in my guy, Jason Whitlock, who was the initial guest on the Wins and Losses podcast. If you haven't listened to that already, it's a phenomenal conversation. I think you'll enjoy it. Thanks again for doing it. I'm assuming you've seen some good stuff on your end. People enjoyed that conversation as well.
Yeah, I think people really enjoyed it. Got some insight into my career.
A lot of fun. For people who don't know and have not been watching, you do speak for yourself. It also happens to be on right before we come on at 4:30 Eastern on Lock It In. And, Jason, all week long, big topic ever since this story came out. I want to start here. Jay-Z partnering with the NFL. Jay-Z has gotten, I would say, a decent amount of criticism from some members of the, for lack of a better term, woke community in the world of sports. What's your take on this relationship?
Well, I think the criticism has come from the people that are committed to Kaepernick more than they're committed to any cause. And I think Kaepernick is in that group of people that think him taking a knee is about Colin Kaepernick's career, not about police brutality or social justice initiatives. And so the people that are committed to Kaepernick are up in arms and upset. How dare Jay-Z partner with the NFL? Kaepernick doesn't have a job. And I just think that's really small thinking. And so it took me a couple of days because the deal, the partnership shocked me, and I wanted to think about it for a couple of days. And where I ended up landing is I just think this is genius on the part of the NFL and Jay-Z. I think these are two groups that need each other and can use each other in a positive way on both ends. Some people are going to misunderstand me when I say this, but it's what I truly believe. I don't think that there's all this hype that Jay-Z's a billionaire. I don't really buy it. I think Jay-Z's incredibly rich. I think he has a chance to be a billionaire, and they put that story out there that he's a billionaire. But the music industry has been severely damaged over the last 15, 20 years by technology and streaming and whatever. And so it's hard for me to believe that someone, unless you're Dr. Dre, who came up with the Beats headphones and created so much value in that, that made him a billionaire. Jay-Z's tried some things with Tidal. Jay-Z is doing some things with Roc Nation. And so I see this as a play for Jay-Z to elevate Roc Nation, his agency that's trying to be a heavyweight in the sports world and in all the entertainment world. I think this partnership with the NFL elevates Roc Nation and perhaps puts them on a trajectory where they can eventually compete with the CAAs, the WMEs, and the major talent agencies around the world or in the United States. And so I think it's a great play for Jay-Z on that way. And then for the NFL, I think Jay-Z's business mindset, and he talked about it in the press conference he did with Roger Goodell, he talks about it a lot in his music. Jay-Z's always about business, and he doesn't let anything interfere with business. He's also, if you take him at his word and you look at the initiatives he's involved in, he wants to impact the community as well. And you can do that. You can be slave to business and also use your business endeavors and the money you make to impact your community. And I think he's going to educate and try to help the players understand, look, man, you don't have to do things on the field while you're conducting business and making money for the NFL. You don't have to bring social justice into that. There's other ways to use your platform and the money you make to make an impact in your communities and promote the kind of change you're interested in without disturbing your business. And so I think, you know, obviously he's going to help them with the halftime shows and their entertainment events. Obviously now he's the face of their social initiatives and things like that. But I also think he's going to be a voice, a mediator between ownership and the players to try to open the players' minds to, look, man, you don't have to throw a tantrum on the field. Everybody's heard you. Now let's execute some things in the community that improve the things you say you're concerned about. I just think he's a great voice for that, and if he can pull it off, I think in 5 to 10 years, he may end up an owner in the NFL.
You said owner in the NFL, and I think that is intriguing because the initial thought that I had was Jay-Z and NFL owners actually have a lot in common because they're both ultimately capitalist. And Jay-Z said something interesting as a part of this announcement with the Wall Street Journal. He said that there were lots of people he partnered with that he didn't agree with politically. And I thought that was really kind of gratifying and refreshing to see, because that's how the real world works. You know, if you're a business person, or if you're at Thanksgiving, or if you're at work, you don't isolate yourself and surround yourself in the real world with only people who agree with you all day long. That seems like a unique phenomenon of social media, and it's not a good one. You agree with that in general?
Well, I'm glad you brought up social media, because that is what's driving it. Only on social media does that exist. And where, oh my God, someone disagrees with me politically, I have to have them removed from society. I can't work with them. And if you're friends with that person who disagrees with me, you're a terrible person too. That's not how the real world works. And I'm so glad that Jay-Z is standing away from social media and talking to real people about real things and how life works in the real world and not over social media. So many people have so, and media people have bought into saying what is good for social media and what will get you retweets and likes rather than what is the truth. I don't blame these young athletes for being confused, and I hope that Jay-Z stands in there and stands firm and helps these guys figure out how the real world actually operates.
It's interesting because I've argued for a while that, like, extreme superstars don't need social media, right? Peyton Manning, not on social media. Charles Barkley, not on social media. Tiger Woods, not very active, really, on social media. Michael Jordan, certainly not on social media. Also, all those guys seem pretty reasonable. Has sports driven athletes to be less reasonable due to social media in some respects?
Look, no question about it. And so many of these guys are out there trying to build their social media brand, and their agents talk them into it, and marketing people talk them into it, and it's so valuable. There's so much money to be made, and you can't be a star without it. And guys like LeBron James and Odell Beckham Jr. and Antonio Brown have swallowed it all hook, line, and sinker, and they want to be the biggest influencers over social media. And it's a mistake. And again, I tip my hat to Jay-Z. I tip my hat to, you know, the names you rattled off, people that realize, like, nah, man, if you're really a star, social media doesn't really help you. And it confuses you. And it's the playground for some of the dumbest stuff on the planet, some of the dumbest illogical thinking on the planet that only works over social media. It's just fascinating. Just even thinking and talking about this reminds me, or puts in my head, the difference between LeBron James and Jay-Z. And these guys used to be kind of wedded at the hip. You know, as I'm watching things play out over the last year or two, and particularly this week with this move Jay-Z's made, It's like Jay-Z and LeBron are going two different directions.
Yeah, expound upon that a little bit. So Jay-Z not that active on social media by and large. LeBron James seems obsessed with social media and his image on social media. And both of these guys are obviously incredibly influential in both the spheres of influence of their own media and music and sports, but also in a larger cultural context. And it does seem like they're going in different directions.
Jay-Z has Rock Nation. LeBron has Clutch Sports. Both of them seem to be vying for the title. And again, they may disagree and say, oh, no, we're not in competition. And maybe they aren't. But they seem to be in competition for who is the premier celebrity, black celebrity, who is the king of so-called, quote-unquote, black culture. And they're going two different directions. They're taking two different approaches. I mean, LeBron James in the past month has started tweeting out, stay woke. That's like some stuff that was said 3 years ago. And LeBron James is the king of the PC woke athlete and all the fake stuff, Nike, the T-shirts, equality and blah, blah, blah. And here comes Jay-Z. He's taking no shots at anybody. But yesterday, or 2 days ago, when he's talking with Roger Goodell, he's like, no, I'm about real work. I'm about the protest and the gestures and all that. I get it. And raising awareness, I get it. He goes, but now we've raised awareness, and now it's about real work and what we're going to do in these communities. And look, LeBron has helped finance a school in Akron or whatever, but LeBron is clearly caught up in PC culture, in woke culture, in social media. Some of this stuff LeBron does is just undignified for a superstar. We've never seen it. And again, this is going to sound like hyper-criticism, but it's really not. It's like hyper-fascination. Like, how bizarre is LeBron going to get? And I'm not just talking about his antics at his son's AAU games. I'm just like, is this really this Taco Tuesday shtick? And I know, oh, it's fun and blah, blah. But have we ever seen someone this high profile every Tuesday? They're so thirsty for attention that they're doing some kind of Mexican-Latino impression over social media, screaming and yelling about Taco Tuesday. Could you imagine Michael Jordan doing that?
No.
Kobe? I've never seen any superstar that is this caught up in social media and doing anything he can to say, hey, look at me. And so I think the dynamics and the pivots that's going on between Jay-Z and LeBron are fascinating. One guy seems to be elevating, and the other guy seems to be descending into the Twitter social media matrix.
Well, what's fascinating about it in so many levels is what you hit on, which is the distinction between saying that you want, complaining, right? Like protesting is effectively a form of complaint. And in order to be effective, at some point it has to pivot from I'm upset about something existing and get some sort of satisfaction, right? Some sort of change. And that requires that you engage in the political process. In other words, the civil rights movement, which is the most effective protest that's ever existed in the history of this country, did not just exist to get people angry and to draw attention to things. The goal was to get a seat at the table, right? The goal was to get in the White House. The goal was to effect change and to change the law. And it seems to me that what Jay-Z is focused on is the history of the civil rights movement, which is about effecting change. And what LeBron wants is the protest and the anger and the angst without any
attention.
Engagement.
This is all about attention.
Yeah.
And again, when you're worth the kind of money that Jay-Z is, LeBron is, all the way down to even Colin Kaepernick, Kaepernick is obsessed with attention. That's why he's been tweeting about himself this week and celebrating the 3-year anniversary of me taking a knee and basically standing on the backs of dead bodies to elevate himself. all of this, and we talked about this Thursday on Speak for Yourself with Reggie Bush, is like when Jay-Z started explaining, like, hey, man, this whole protest thing wasn't about Colin Kaepernick getting the job. It was supposed to be about injustice to poor people and police brutality. So why does everybody keep circling back to Colin Kaepernick and his job? And why does Colin Kaepernick keep – Colin Kaepernick should be celebrating Jay-Z's arrival in the NFL and this initiative that he's going to be fronting and his partnership with the NFL. If Kaepernick were in his right mind, those would all be seen, hey, look what my protest sparked, and I'm going to celebrate this. But he's not happy because, again, in my view, the whole thing has always been about elevating Colin Kaepernick. And, again, I'll say that LeBron James, I think he's obsessed with elevating himself. I'm looking here at Jay-Z, and he's like, look, man, when I go out and rap and do those other things, I'm going to elevate myself. But when I involve myself in social justice causes or these other endeavors, I'm going to elevate those issues and bring real change. It's a fascinating time. I've been a longtime critic of Jay-Z, Clay, and I'm in the middle of a full Deion Sanders backpedal. This guy shocked me this week.
I'm fascinated about it. You got time for a few more minutes with us?
Yeah.
When we come back, we'll have more with Jason Whitlock here. I am Clay Travis. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. We're with Jason Whitlock right now. Appreciate him spending time with us as we break down what I think is a fascinating story, the Jay-Z union with the NFL. And I'm curious, as we bring you back in, Jason, how much of this could be age? I mean, we got LeBron James, who's around 35, and I believe I'm correct that Jay-Z is over 50 now. And as you age...
I think he's 49.
49, okay. As you age, it becomes more likely that I would say you recognize... let's say, when you're young, you think you know the answers to everything, right? I think that's commonplace. Everybody out there who's ever been 24, 19 years old, whatever you are, you think you have the answers to everything. As you age, you recognize that maybe the questions are more complicated than you thought they were. How much of this could be the difference in age between LeBron and Jay-Z in terms of how they are approaching and interacting with larger societal issues?
Well, I certainly think that plays a role, no question about it. But I don't think that's the complete answer. I think it's about who you're engaging with and who you're, you know, talking with on a day-to-day basis. And I think it's a difference in path. And people are going to get upset when I say this, but it's just factually true. Jay-Z's path is so much more difficult than LeBron's. So much, 100 times more difficult. And I don't say that, I say that because Jay-Z wasn't blessed with these once-in-a-lifetime generational physical gifts that LeBron James was. And when you're born with those physical gifts that LeBron James was, at about 10 or 11 years old, all kinds of grown men and adults start saying, oh my God, if we can just get this kid to 18 in one piece, 19 years old, he's going to be a pot of gold for us in professional sports. That's not Jay-Z's path. Obviously, he had, in the rap industry, there are no overnight sensations. You have to put in so much work. And he had to claw and scratch and fight his way to the top of the rap music industry. And that was a long, long journey with a lot of competition. Because, again, there's a lot more equality in the rap game, because a lot of it's subjective, who's good or not. In LeBron's field, his physical gifts, again, I've said this many times, if LeBron had failed as a basketball player, he would be Michael Beasley and would have made $30 or $40 million if he were a failure. Clearly, he didn't fail. He's excelled. He's worth $500 million. He's got his clutch sports agency and all that other stuff. But I just think their paths are so different, and Jay-Z had to put in more work and had to use his mind more than LeBron to get where he's at, that explains the difference as well. And so when Jay-Z starts interacting with other people that are super wealthy and are billionaires or whatever, he can understand their path, and there's commonality.
Yeah.
He wasn't an instant millionaire at 18 years old. But by the time LeBron was 14, 15, 16 years old, people were providing him cars and things in high school and making sure he was well taken care of. I just think they have two different completely paths, and those paths are leading them to draw different conclusions about what's the right message to pass on to young people.
What happens with the NFL now? Like, is this, like, as you go forward, has the NFL helped to alleviate some of the concerns of players? Because I think when you think about this, Jay-Z is basically a go-between, right? There are a lot of players who look at Jay-Z as the pinnacle of black achievement in a capitalistic society, certainly in the entertainment industry in America today. And if Jay-Z is saying, hey, I'm they may connect with him better than they do with Roger Goodell, who's an old white guy, and a lot of other old white owners. I think you agree, and you said at the beginning of this conversation, you think this is good for the NFL. How so?
Well, again, I think they have someone who will be there as a symbol and a voice to help them understand fully the entertainment business they're in, because that's all football is. It's the entertainment business. It's a television show. It's there to provide these guys with an opportunity to make money. How it's going to go, it's hard to predict, because this other side is trying to force the Colin Kaepernick issue as a wedge issue in the NFL. It's no different than the identity politics we see in real politics. They just play the race card, divide. So if anybody disagrees with you, they're racist, blah, blah, divide. And Kaepernick is being used as that issue, and that's why so many guys seem to be upset initially with Jay-Z. Oh, my God, Kaepernick's not in the league. Jay-Z, how can you do this? And I don't think that group is going to quiet down, and social media is going to continue to push that narrative that the NFL is the most racist place in the world, and people, you know, social media is where you avoid all facts, that, you know, 75-80% of the league is African American. No industry has created more black millionaires than the NFL. We're going to ignore all that. Cap doesn't have a job. The NFL must be shut down. It's racist. You know, Cap's one guy that made a bad decision and lost his career. Carmelo Anthony's going through it in the NBA. He's made some bad decisions, and no one wants to sign him. He's got the talent to play in the NBA, but no one wants to sign him because of the headache and the noise and, you know, his attitude they don't believe is right, and so no one wants to sign him. It happens all the time in sports. There's been far more talented quarterbacks than Colin Kaepernick who couldn't get a job in the NFL because the NFL said it ain't worth the headache. My boy Jeff George, far more talented than Colin Kaepernick. And so how it's going to play, I don't know. To me, it depends on how deep the hooks are social media has in these athletes. Can you unhook the brainwashing from them so that they can see reality? I think that's what the NFL hopes Jay-Z does, helps these guys see the real reality of the world and the NFL. I think it's a great play. I think it's going to be effective. How effective? We'll have to wait and see.
Outstanding stuff as always. Go follow him on Twitter at Whitlock Jason. Watch his show, Speak for Yourself, hour and a half on every single day on FS1 starting at 3 o'clock. Good stuff as always, my man. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Clay.
That's Jason Whitlock. I'm Clay Travis. Rolling into hour two, Jason Martin's going to swing by and hang out with us. We'll talk about the DeMarcus Cousins injury, what the impact is for that with the Lakers, and also we'll dive into the Nike case, Michael Avenatti with a 50-page filing. What does that mean? Was Nike paying high school basketball players too? All that's fascinating. All that is still to come in hour two. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Hope your Friday is going well. Relax. You're almost to the weekend. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of OutKick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Geico, OutKick Studios. Hope all of you are having a fantastic Friday as we roll into hour two here. Now, look, I'm not the kind of guy who believes that it's wrong for college athletes to get paid for their college talents. If you listen to this show on a regular basis, you know that I am an incredible capitalist. I want all of you to get filthy rich. I want all of you to make as much money as you possibly can. I want you all to be wildly successful, all right? But I have been paying attention to this Adidas college basketball case for a while. And I think we're going to talk with Michael Avenatti at some point in the near future, maybe next week, about this Nike case that he has been involved in. But if you didn't read it or pay attention to it, he dropped a 50-page court filing in his extortion case where he was charged with a crime. And he basically laid out pretty concretely that Nike has been paying players just like Adidas has been paying players. And if you pay attention to this show, you know, I've been talking about for a while, why in the world is it that Adidas got the book thrown at them and they got their employees put in prison and Nike was totally fine that they were doing the same thing? And the skeptic in me wants to say, well, it's because Adidas is a German company. And so the United States government, the FBI, the Department of Justice, they decided to investigate the German company for paying players coming out of high school into college. And they went after all these Adidas schools. And Nike, they just gave a complete pass to. And in his filing, and again, I think we're going to talk to Avenatti early next week, but in his filing, he makes it pretty clear, based on text messages and the evidence that he lays out, pretty strong case that Nike was paying Zion, that Nike was paying Bol, that Nike was paying DeAndre Ayton, among others. And that 40 of the teams, according to text messages from people inside of Nike themselves, 40 different teams, these AAU teams that are sponsored by Nike, of the 40 teams that they sponsor, Nike's own employees believed that 38 of those teams were using Nike money to pay all of the high school players and their families. Now, again, I don't begrudge anybody getting paid for their talent. I am a longtime proponent of the idea that if you are 18 years old and you are good enough, you should be able to go pro in anything. And the easy argument I always make that always blows everybody's minds is we don't ask any singer that make them have to go to sing in the choir or the chorus at their college before they can release an album. Taylor Swift made an awful lot of money before she was 18 years old. And we didn't require her to go to Vanderbilt and go sing in the Vanderbilt choir or chorus or whatever group it was on campus for 3 years before she could release an album. We said, oh, what? You know what? She's really talented. She should be able to get whatever market value she has accrue to her. And so I am of the opinion that if you are 18 years old, you should be able to go pro. It worked for LeBron. It worked for Tracy McGrady. It worked for Kevin Garnett. It worked for Kobe Bryant. There's a long list of 18-year-olds that went pro and had incredible NBA careers. Some of them did not. Yes, that's true. But a lot of 22-year-olds don't have very good NBA careers either. Over time, NBA players are better the younger they are if they're drafted in the first round because they tend to be more talented. So I have no problem with these guys getting money. What I have a problem with is selective prosecution by the United States, and it seems like the United States decided to throw the book at Adidas and do nothing at all to Nike. Now, I want to bring in Danny G. Does this seem like we've been talking about this case for a while, and again, there was a 50-page court filing that's out there that I think is a pretty blockbuster unveiling of Nike's wrongdoing, and it's significant because Nike, I believe, lied to the United States government and said they had no knowledge of any payments going to high school players when sort of the government sniffed around a little bit as a part of this Adidas investigation. But it's wild to me that Nike gets a complete pass and Adidas is like the bad guys and their entire business gets rattled and they put people in jail and all these Adidas colleges are under fire and Nike just completely escapes blame. Are you with me that this is crazy?
Yeah, when I saw this story yesterday, I knew you were going to be all over this. The question I have, because I didn't get to read the documents.
I did. I saw you tweeting and arguing
with a few people on Twitter, which makes sense because they hadn't read the documents and it looked like you did. So that's why I want to ask you, why does it look like Avenatti is not maybe guilty of blackmail here?
Yeah, extortion.
Yes, extortion.
So first of all, it's a good question. And let me put my lawyer hat on here for you. The distinction between blackmail and extortion and trying to settle a case is a very tenuous one. And what I mean by that is, let me give you an example. David Letterman, if you remember, and Rick Pitino are two famous guys who have had extortion claims against them. And if you remember back in the day, David Letterman came out, and as part of his monologue, he said, yeah, I was getting extorted. I had a relationship with a girl who was a writer on our staff, and she threatened to go public with it if I didn't pay her money. And I went to the authorities, and now I'm just going to come out publicly and admit to you that I behaved in an inappropriate fashion, and this is the story, and I'm going to get directly ahead of it. I'm going to tell you guys exactly what happened. And Rick Pitino, if you remember, when he was at Louisville, before he lost his job in this Adidas scandal, was also extorted by a woman who said, hey, you got me pregnant. I'm going to tell everybody about this if you don't pay me X number of dollars. Usually the difference between extortion and a claim to settle a case is lawyers negotiating. If an individual in their own right, without legal representation and without other lawyers involved, threatens to bring public a scandalous or inappropriate or story that you wish was not public and asks for money in exchange not to do so, a lot of times that individual is going to get pegged with extortion. If you retain a lawyer, the lawyer contacts somebody else and says, hey, we've got an unfortunate situation here. We want to settle this and avoid any of these allegations going public, or we're going to have to file a lawsuit. That is a difference between a blackmail slash extortion and a negotiated settlement, perhaps. Now, the distinction clearly there is you are threatening to file a lawsuit over a legal wrongdoing when you have a lawyer representing you, as opposed to potentially just saying, pay me, or I'm going to go talk to a newspaper, or I'm going to talk to a television network or whatever else, and air your dirty laundry. There has to be an actionable legal claim to avoid an extortion or blackmail complaint, among other things. And when I read this case, I believe that what Avenatti did was not very much different than what a lot of other lawyers do, which is you call in the company, you tell them what you've got, and you say, if you don't play ball with us and effectively settle this case, we're going to file a lawsuit and we're going to go public with these allegations as a part of that lawsuit. So it's an interesting question about what's a fine line. I also understand whenever I mention this guy's name, Michael Avenatti, because he's involved with Donald Trump and he's been on CNN so much and everybody else, and because he's involved in the political universe, people say, oh, I don't believe him because of the political connection. And I understand that. People out there in this highly charged partisan era, you can choose not to believe somebody because you don't like their politics. But what I have found practicing law in my prior life is that very often, sometimes the people who are not pristine and clean in their past are sometimes telling you the truth about things other than some of their situations, right? And what I mean by that is it's an illusion, if you've ever done any kind of criminal law, that there are lots of great guys that have never done anything wrong that are testifying oftentimes in criminal cases, right? If you are in a murder case, or if you're in a rape case, or if you're in a serious charge case, very often your witnesses are somewhat unreliable because they might have done things that are dishonest in their past. But just because you have done something that is not great in your past and been dishonest even potentially in your past doesn't mean that you're always dishonest. And one of the real challenges of being a lawyer is being willing to look at all the evidence and take away the individual who's involved and just look at what you believe is factually accurate in the case. And when I read this this complaint filed by Avenatti, I said, my God, he's got Nike dead to rights, and you may not like him. And you may think that he is not a very good guy, and you may not agree with his politics, And you may also be of the opinion, like I am, and frankly, like he is when he's been on the show before, and say, we don't have a problem with athletes being paid based on their talent to go to college. The issue is, if you're going to say Adidas and their behavior is thoroughly unacceptable, you can't treat Nike differently. That just doesn't make any sense at all to me. That's the biggest challenge, I think, in general. So that is where we are. Big universe of show coming. We got my guy Jason Martin is going to join us next. He's going to slide in. We're going to talk a little bit about this Dak Prescott contract dilemma. This is OutKick on Fox Sports Radio.
This is OutKick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico OutKick Studios. I hope all of you are having fantastic Fridays wherever you may be across this great country or this great land. Jason Martin sometimes guest hosts the show. He hung out with me on Thursday. I'm going to bring him in as a guest for this segment because I think it's an intriguing question. I want us, we talked a little bit about this earlier this week, but I want to bring in to J. Mart to get his opinion on this. Let's pretend that you are in the quarterback market, right? Yep. You are out there and you are trying to decide there's a quarterback draft going on. Dak Prescott's status in the NFL is to me utterly fascinating because reports are out there as they fight over what exactly Dak Prescott is worth. Dallas Cowboys say he wants $40 million. He wants to be the highest paid quarterback ever. There are also reports that are out there that he's wanting $30 million. Russell Wilson is the highest paid quarterback in the NFL at $35 million a year. So those reports would suggest that Dak is arguing I should be paid the most in all of the NFL, in the history of the NFL, in the history of the quarterback position. I have been having fun conversations about this with a variety of different people, but I want to bring you in, J-Mart. First, let's start with this question. If Dak Prescott is available on the open market and every other quarterback is available on the open market, it's a little bit different. So let's say you have to have a guy for 2 to 3 years. Where does Dak rank right now in the NFL, in your opinion? Like, as you start to run through all of the available quarterbacks in the NFL, and by that I mean, where should he slot in from a salary perspective? And I'm going to give you a bunch of names, and I want you to just tell me when I reach one that you're like, oh, I would take Dak over him. Okay? Mm-hmm. And I think the first, like, 10 or 11, I don't think there's going to be any doubt. You're going to be like, no way, okay? And these are guys in no particular order. It's not like I'm saying, hey, this guy's the best in the NFL, but I'm looking at salaries. Russell Wilson. Everybody out there would rather have Russell Wilson. Aaron Rodgers. I think everybody out there would rather have Aaron Rodgers. I think everybody out there would rather have Drew Brees. I think everybody out there would rather have Andrew Luck. This is if you're having just a straight-up quarterback draft. I think everybody out there would rather have Tom Brady. I think pretty much everybody out there would rather have Phillip Rivers. I think all of those guys are definite yeses. I think Matt Ryan, most people would rather have Matt Ryan for the next 2 to 3 years than they would Dak Prescott. I think Ben Roethlisberger, most people would rather have Ben Roethlisberger. I think that your average person out there would probably rather have, I think anyway, Cam Newton than they would Dak Prescott. Those are all guys, right, that are multi-year veterans. Then you can go into some of the young guys. I think most people who are listening to us right now would rather have Baker Mayfield based on what we saw from year one than they would from Dak Prescott. All right, then I think you run into some uncertain guys, right? Like, you're not really sure. I think most people probably Deshaun Watson. Do you have Deshaun Watson or Dak Prescott?
Me, Deshaun Watson.
Even with the injury situation.
Yeah, because, I mean, if you're looking at this from a perspective of them being behind the same offensive line with the same weapons, I'm taking Deshaun Watson all day.
Jared Goff.
I'm taking Jared Goff.
Okay. What about Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota? Would you take either one of those guys over Dak?
No.
Okay. So I've reached those two guys are starters. What about Sam Darnold?
I think I'm taking Darnold because I don't feel like last week or last year was indicative of what it is that I think Sam Darnold is capable of.
What about Nick Foles?
Taking Dak.
Okay, Joe Flacco.
Dak.
Okay, so I think we've kind of reached that level, and that means to me Derek Carr, we haven't asked.
I'm taking Dak. I just don't believe in Derek Carr since the injury.
Matt Stafford, Garoppolo, Cousins. Would you take any of those three?
I might take Cousins, even though I really want to see something from him this year. Stafford has a ton of talent, but I've just seen it never translate to anything else. I guess you could say the same thing about Cousins, but I might take Cousins. He would probably be the one of the three.
What about Carson Wentz?
I'd take Wentz, even though I know that Dak has won playoff games and Carson Wentz is 3-5 in December and has never won a playoff game. I'm still taking Carson Wentz.
All right, the reason why I raise all that is you are around the same area I am, which is putting Dak around 15 or 16 in the NFL, right? Quintessentially the most average quarterback in the NFL. And we just ran through most of the starting quarterbacks that you would say are in the same caliber as Dak. All right, so now I want to ask you this question. Let's pretend, I'm going to give you these four teams. Let's pretend that Marcus Mariota doesn't pan out for the Tennessee Titans. Let's pretend that Jameis Winston doesn't pan out for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Let's also assume, which I think is a good assumption, the Miami Dolphins are not going to have a successful experiment with Ryan Fitzpatrick or certainly with Josh Rosen. And let's also presume that the long-range future of the Cincinnati Bengals is not Andy Dalton, okay? All four of those teams find themselves in the quarterback market for next year. The Cowboys say to Dak Prescott, we are not willing to rise to the level that you are demanding. Do any of those four teams give Dak Prescott $25 million or more in your mind? The Bengals, the Dolphins, the Titans, or the Bucks, all of whom would be definitely in the quarterback market, or do you think they would rather go into the draft and take a guy like Justin Herbert, a guy like Tua Tagovailoa, and a guy like potentially Jake Fromm, knowing also that Trevor Lawrence is out there another year away in the event that you want to follow and have kind of a bridge quarterback that is there as a Band-Aid because you don't have a high enough pick or whatever else? Do any of those four teams, which in the situation I just gave you, would all be in the market for a quarterback? Do any of them give Dak $25 million or more?
I don't think the Titans do. I think Cincinnati might because they've been so dreadful at trying to draft quarterbacks dating back to, what, Akili Smith? I mean, they've struggled for a long, long time. The Dolphins,
Let me pause you there on the Bengals. I agree with you on the Titans. On the Bengals, I don't know that Dak is anything that already Andy Dalton is different, right? Like Andy Dalton costs $16 million a year right now, and I think he's in the Dak Prescott arena, right? You might prefer Dak over Andy Dalton, but I think they're in the same stratosphere. In other words, if you put Andy Dalton on the Cowboys, you gave him that offensive line, you gave him every weapon, the defense that the Cowboys have, I don't know that there would be a massive difference in the performance of Andy Dalton and Dak Prescott by the numbers. So I'm not convinced, you might be, but I'm not convinced that the Bengals would give $25 million to Dak, given that I think they almost have a Dak-like quarterback in Andy Dalton. But you're saying maybe. Okay, so the Titans, no. Bengals, maybe. What about the Bucks or the Dolphins?
I mean, what Arians is saying about Jameis Winston would indicate that if he could get a better version of Jameis Winston, one that's a more consistent winner, I would say, because they're similar in terms of like completion percentage and a lot of their stats. I could maybe see him thinking that Dak Prescott has the intangibles that Jameis Winston doesn't right now. It would, again, it's all going to depend on the end of the year. And then if you look at Miami, I could definitely see Miami doing it. I don't know what's going to happen with their coaching situation. There's a lot of stuff here. The stat that I look at when it comes to quarterbacks is not QBR and it's not passer rating. It's DVOA. And I've got it pulled up in front of me right now with Football Outsiders. And so basically DVOA is average situations or the exact same situations, how would X player perform compared to an average player at that position?
It's almost value over replacement,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's exactly what it is, as a matter of fact. So number one in the league last season was Patrick Mahomes. He was 40% better than an average player would be in any given time on the field, which
is
ridiculous.
And that's even better when you consider that what he cost,
yes,
right? Because it's not like he's making 40% more than every other quarterback. In fact, he's under his rookie deal, which is why eventually when Mahomes hits the open market, he's going to get $40 or $45 million a year. That's got to be what his guys are projecting.
Exactly. So where do you think, just shot out of the dark, where do you think Dak Prescott rates in the NFL with quarterbacks that actually played substantial time last year in DVOA rankings? Compared to an average player, what number in terms of quarterbacks do you think he would be?
These are all so the thing that I would say about Dak is the number, and I don't have his numbers in front of me right now. I have looked at him over time. he has a lot of turnovers. Like, he fumbles the ball a lot. That doesn't necessarily get factored in typical passer ratings. I know Jameis Winston is like the worst turnover machine in the NFL right now, but Dak is pretty bad in that respect. I would guess that Dak in the analytics would not look awful, but I would think he would be maybe top 10.
Try 26.
All right, that's bad.
I mean, it's awful. I mean, it's absolutely hideous. He is, according to DVOA, 8.1% worse than an average player, an average quarterback in the same situations across the board.
Wow. I didn't know it was that bad. So, like, give me for the DVOA numbers, and again, this is for people out there, because I know analytics, sometimes you're early in the morning, like it's spinning over your head and everything
else. It's tough for math right now.
Yeah. A lot of people are not great at math, including me. Anybody who's ever heard me try to do live math on the air. For people out there, this is basically like you're trying to quantify what the average quarterback would do in an NFL game and then quantify how much better a player is. And for instance, you said Patrick Mahomes is 40% better than an average quarterback. That's off the charts. Who are the other guys? Like, what would the top 10, according to DVOA, say? And does that kind of correspond to what a lot of people would think are the 10 best quarterbacks in the NFL?
No, but a lot of them are. Mahomes, okay. Drew Brees, Phillip Rivers, who just had the best season of his career probably, Matt Ryan, and then you have an outlier in Ryan Fitzpatrick, who did have a great year. I mean, they had an awful defense, but he scored a ton of points in Tampa Bay last
year. Yeah, I mean, statistically, he was off the charts.
Yes. Jared Goff.
Okay.
Brady, Roethlisberger, Andrew Luck, and Russell Wilson, I believe. Yeah, that's the top 10 right there. Just outside the top 10 is Deshaun Watson, Carson Wentz, Aaron Rodgers, Baker Mayfield.
All right, where do a guy like Mariota and Winston, who are two of the guys that I just gave you who potentially could be in the mix to get a replacement here, where would those guys rank in this
Interestingly,
list?
Winston rates at 15, which is crazy high to me, but I mean, this is just the analytic numbers, and Mariota is 27th, so he's beneath Dak Prescott. It's Dak. If you want to go around that same area, if you want to look from 20 down, 20 was Trubisky, 21 is Stafford, 22 was Derek Carr, 23 was Cam, 24 is Eli, 25 is Nick Foles. Then you get to Dak Prescott, Marcus Mariota, Case Keenum, Alex Smith, and Sam Darnold.
Well, so that would kind of square with my idea that, to me, Dak on the open market is basically Nick Foles. Like, he should make around $22 million a year if you were just valuing him, not being the Dallas Cowboy quarterback, not considering his relationship with Jerry Jones or anything else associated with that. That suggests that if the Cowboys give him $30 million or more, they are not just overpaying him, they are wildly overpaying him, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the key. You can never overpay a great quarterback. But you can set your franchise back forever if you overpay an average to mediocre quarterback that's always going to be just good enough but not great enough. And I think that's where we are with Dak. I'm really fascinated to watch what he does this year on the field. I just don't look at that guy and say that's a Super Bowl-winning quarterback unless he's in an ideal situation.
I agree with you.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Welcome back, Geico Outkick Studios. Danny G, we're out here in L.A., and I get out to L.A., and chaos starts for the Lakers. Yesterday afternoon, news comes down that DeMarcus Cousins has had a tortured recent injury history. He looks like he's set for a Supermax deal as a member of the New Orleans Pelicans. He tears his Achilles tendon, right? I believe it was. And then he decides, I'm going to rehab. He goes out to Golden State. Then he gets another injury to his quad, I believe, recently. Before that, he also injured. I mean, this guy has been a walking MASH unit, and now he has torn his ACL, and he's probably going to miss all of next year. I mean, based on the way he finished off the finals, it didn't seem like he had fully recovered from his injuries already, and now he's got another one. I mean, I feel awful for him. But you have to almost wonder if he's ever going to be able to come back and play in the NBA hardly at all again. And this is obviously a big blow for the Lakers as well, as he was a guy I think that many people had hoped maybe they got a good buy on him and he's going to be able to outperform the contract that they got him. This is tough. This is a big hit, not just for DeMarcus Cousins, but also for the Lakers.
Yeah, the last time you were in L.A., Clay, you brought huge earthquakes.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Now this.
Kawhi, and it culminated in the Kawhi earthquake with him joining the Clippers.
Yeah, so I don't know who to burn the sage around, you or DeMarcus Cousins. Poor guy. I mean, whether you're a Lakers fan or not, and it's interesting because Twitter is a breeding ground for negativity, but even haters of the Lakers felt bad for Boogie. It's just, and I think all of us know what it's like to bump your knee against somebody else, even in a like a stupid pickup game, because obviously we're nowhere near playing at a pro level, but that's what happened. Monday, he's in Vegas, he's training, he's practicing, and he banged his knee, knee to knee against somebody else. And so the Lakers were hoping that it wasn't serious, but then news comes out yesterday that it is indeed a torn ACL. And as you were saying, he's now had this list of injuries, a torn Achilles, a quad, now an ACL, all in the last 566 days. Three serious injuries.
Yeah, and you always wonder when you have those injuries whether one leads to another. And obviously we had a lot of discussion about this with Kevin Durant. He's got a hurt calf muscle, and then he goes out and somehow he tears his Achilles. And I think most people out there kind of anticipate that if you have one injury, it makes you more susceptible, not just to that injury, but also to your body adjusting and trying to protect itself, and then you injure yourself again. Let's break it down what it means for the Lakers going forward, right? Like, so the Laker trio that was going to lead this team regardless is Anthony Davis, LeBron James, and Kyle Kuzma. What does this do to, in your mind, to the Lakers' overall depth? And also, here's what I would say. It lowers their ceiling, because if you were out there and you're a huge Laker fan, I know a lot of people listening to us are Laker fans. If you are a huge Laker fan, you could look at DeMarcus Cousins as a low-risk, high-reward caliber player. If he were able to come back from his injuries, and sometimes it takes a couple of years to come back from a serious injury, you could hope that he could rise back up to the level of a consistent double-double kind of guy, right? A guy that you could rely on to give you good minutes, who could come in. We saw it happen in the NBA Finals. Even if he's not consistently good, his ceiling is high enough that he can win you some games during the course of a season. To me, it just lowers the ceiling a little bit of the Lakers. Not a ton, because obviously there are other players that could be injured that would have much more significant impact on the season. But this was a guy that you hoped was the equivalent of a stock that you had bought low that could have a big run coming if everything went well, and now that's gone, so it just diminishes the overall ceiling in terms of wins for the Lakers. You buy that idea?
Yeah, that's exactly it, because at the start of the segment, I think you said it best. They were hoping for a bargain.
Yeah.
Because the money they gave him, it would have been a bargain had he been able to be healthy and perform well as they thought he would, mesh up well with the other new signees on the team. Now, I was looking at Sportsline here. According to them, the Lakers' win total falls only from 53 to 52.3 without him.
Yeah.
So I think that shows that you're right with that take. The question now is about depth with the Lakers, because now they need a solid backup for JaVale McGee. Who is that going to be? I mean, the options in free agency would be Joakim Noah, does not get along with LeBron. That's not going to happen. Kenneth Faried, Ryan Anderson, who? Dwight Howard, that's interesting. He's likely going to be waived by Memphis eventually. When he does, the Lakers might want to consider the possibility of a reunion. Now, he didn't get along with Kobe, but Kobe's days are long gone now. Could you picture Dwight Howard maybe coming to have a chance at a championship run?
Well, we know what happened the last time he came to the Lakers.
Yeah, but it was a way different team.
There was
and
a
dynamic.
Lot of optimism on that team, too.
I understand, but now they just need a backup at center, because you don't want to move Unibrow there, because he does not like playing that position. We know this.
Yeah, it's going to be intriguing as LA is the center of the basketball universe. And it just seems a little bit like right now the Lakers are snake bit. We'll see whether or not that continues. And still, I'm still a little bit apprehensive, and I know this makes Laker fans nervous. I think that we might see a Kobe-like ending for LeBron. I know that LeBron has been indestructible, and I know that he's been able to play so many years at such a high level. But I kind of feel like at some point it just goes. Mm. And even for somebody as good as LeBron James, the injury that he had last year was like Superman getting his cape tugged on, right? It wasn't a massive injury,
but it was a kind of a record scratch moment where you suddenly realize maybe this guy is not going to be able to play at a perfect level for the rest of his career. And we'll see. But this is not a good sign for the Lakers as we roll into summer. And honestly, it's not that long until teams will start reporting back again. And it just takes away, I think, the ceiling for the Lakers. As we continue to roll on, we're going to break down some NFL preseason action for you. I think we'll have a lot of fun there. I also want to tell you, if you haven't downloaded the newest Wins and Losses podcast, make sure you do it. If you're a college football fan, Joel Klatt's going to be the guest. We're going to put it up live on Sunday. All right, if you're out there right now and you are a fan of college football and you're aching for college football to be back, well, first of all, come next Monday. After this weekend, we're going to be able to sit around and talk about it being officially college football season, but also really fun conversation with Joel Klatt. It's going to go up Sunday as a part of the Wins and Losses podcast. If you haven't subscribed and rated that exclusive podcast, type in my name on iTunes, Clay Travis, the podcast universe. Go seek it out. This is Outkick the Coverage. More on NFL preseason football. 5 games in action last night. We'll talk about them when we come back. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
Welcome back. Final hour of the week, Geico Outkick Studios. We got 5 preseason games that took place last night. I'm going to dive into them, tell you a little bit of a takeaway from each one of those games that I took note of. But in the meantime, the Chicago Bears, they're in East Rutherford tonight to take on the Giants in a nationally televised preseason game. We'll get to see what's going on there. And also, most importantly, probably get to see how Daniel Jones does in his second week and see whether or not the Daniel Jones excitement can continue to grow among the Giants fan. All right, 5 games that were going on last night in the preseason universe. I'm going to break down something that jumped out at me from every single one of them. And we already talked a lot in hour one about how awful, just absolutely awful, Kyler Murray looked. Kyler Murray's stats in totality, in case you're wondering out there and you didn't pay attention to their game against the Raiders, Kyler Murray, 3 for 8, 12 yards passing, got sacked twice, 45.8. One of those sacks, by the way, was a safety. Rushed the ball 1 time for 4 yards. This was not an impressive Kyler Murray is going to rewrite NFL offensive record books. A little bit troubling if you are a Cardinals fan, because everything out there about NFL preseason that we hear over and over and over again is that people never really prepare defensively at all. So if Kyler Murray, against a very blasé and boring and not very well put together defensive game plan, can't do anything. And then Brett Hundley comes in. And by the way, he wasn't just going against the starters for the Raiders. He was going against a lot of second team guys. Brett Hundley comes in and immediately leads the team down the field to get a touchdown. A little bit ominous if you are a Cardinals fan. Now, early in the season, we way overreact to preseason football. It's been proven to not matter at all. But we only have a limited number of snaps so far to judge Kyler Murray on. That is not a very impressive performance. On the flip side, Raider offense looked pretty good. Raider offense came out, made some plays. Derek Carr wasn't in long, but when he was in, he made plays pretty rapidly. Raiders were an awful team last year. They took it to the Cardinals, who were also an awful team last year. So I think, as much as it pains me, Danny G, a little bit of reason to be excited based on what you saw from your Raiders.
Yeah, and I'm not going to overreact because it is preseason, but it's nice to see Derek Carr, who Jeff Schwartz lovingly refers to as a goober, be so confident on the field, whether he was handing off to Josh Jacobs out of Alabama for the first time, who has the possibility to maybe be the offensive rookie of the year. You know what Jacobs is capable of. If he can lock down the running back position, then that takes some pressure off of Carr. If they could piece the O-line together and give Carr a little bit of time to get the ball down the field to Grant, who we've seen has some really good chemistry with the Raider quarterbacks. And, of course, when A.B. finally gets onto the field, they have Tyrell Williams. There's light at the end of the tunnel. You remember the Browns, two seasons ago, where they were the joke, they were the punchline in the league, and the Raiders kind of took that spot. You know, as a long-suffering Raiders fan, it's hard turning on the TV, turning on the radio, listening to all the jokes. That's why Gruden on Hard Knocks, what did he say? Better blanket execution. Do you read what people are writing about us? I'm tired. It sounds like the team is taking it to heart, and I'm excited now to see the next episode of Hard Knocks. I want to see what Gruden thinks of the performance, because the Raiders were flying around the field.
All right.
Not bad for a team led by a guy with CTE.
As much as it pains me to admit it. Other games going on. The Eagles. Intriguing situation that the Eagles find themselves in. They got a couple of backup quarterbacks injured. Clayton Thorson, who was at Northwestern, came in and performed pretty decently. He's a rookie. He played a lot of snaps, threw the ball around the field quite a bit. Will the Eagles make a decision to go back out and get somebody because they've got the Sudfeld injury, right? And then they've got the Cody Kessler injury now. So that's a storyline, given the fact that we all know Carson Wentz has not exactly been a picture of health. So the backup in Philadelphia, now that Nick Foles is gone and with the Jags, could be significant. The Jags, hard to tell much of anything what's going on. Gardner Minshew was in at quarterback, formerly the mustachioed legend from Washington State. He's been decent so far in the preseason, has gotten a lot of snaps as they kind of get ready for Nick Foles to eventually make his debut. If you're a Packers fan, I would be a little bit nervous about the fact that they expected for Brett Favre, for Aaron Rodgers to play, and Aaron Rodgers did not play at all with tightness in his back, and as a result, DeShone Kizer comes in. There's not a lot of reason to be paying attention to the games if Aaron Rodgers is not there, but it is intriguing to me that he was a scratch, primarily because LaFleur is now the new coach there. We've got a new offensive system. You would think that Aaron Rodgers would want to get a little bit in the rhythm. Usually you don't play in the fourth game of the preseason if you are a decent NFL quarterback. So what about the second game not playing? Is Aaron Rodgers going to play a lot in the third game? That's a storyline to pay attention to. In terms of the Ravens, I'm not a big believer in the Ravens necessarily, and Lamar Jackson came out just okay. Hard to get a read on what exactly is going to go on with Lamar Jackson, but a fairly blasé game between the Ravens and the Packers. What about the Bengals and the Redskins? Well, we had an awful performance by Dwayne Haskins in week one. He came out and he was just atrocious. Andy Dalton came in for the Bengals. He wasn't good. He's making $16 million. He throws a pick. And so there's not a lot of reason for excitement about him at all. But then Ryan Finley comes in, and he played decently. He's playing against the backups, everything else associated with that. I'm not sure how much of a read to get on it, but Finley was not bad. But for the Redskins, last week, as bad as Dwayne Haskins was, this week against the Bengals, and granted it's the Bengals, and everybody kind of looks decent against the Bengals, but Haskins came in, and he looked a lot better. In the pocket, looked a lot more comfortable, did not throw multiple interceptions almost immediately upon entering the game. In fact, he threw a touchdown pass. I was pretty impressed with Dwayne Haskins. Decent growth from him. Maybe a reason for optimism based on that performance, to the extent that you can value anything in the preseason. He was not bad. And then we got a Jets-Falcons game. We know what to expect from Matt Ryan. He came in. He looked good. He looked smooth. Winged the ball around. Matt Schaub, whatever. It's amazing to me that he's still in the league. And there was not really that much excitement that went on with the Falcons. Again, except they brought in Matt Ryan, and he looked fine. Now, on the Jets, we've talked a ton about Baker Mayfield in the world of the NFL. Sam Darnold, not bad. Came in. The question that I think is one of the most fascinating in the NFL this season is, how do you balance out Sam Darnold versus Baker Mayfield? Baker Mayfield getting all of the attention. Sam Darnold showing a lot of decent signs down the stretch for the Jets franchise. Came in and looked decent. And this, to me, is one of the great storylines of the year coming up in the NFL. So that is a quick run-through of the five NFL preseason games that happened last night. A little takeaway from every single one of them in the event you didn't get to pay much attention to what you were seeing. Best performance probably put forward by, I don't know, who would you say the best performance was? If I was giving away a game ball, probably give the game ball
to Glennon.
Maybe Dwayne Haskins. I think Dwayne Haskins was pretty solid. Maybe also Clayton Thorson, who had to come in and play a lot of snaps for the Eagles. The takeaway the game ball from, the exact opposite of the game ball, has to go to Kyler Murray, who was, in fact, the worst out there. I thought by far he was the least advantageous. Danny G, anything I missed breaking down those five games? Anything else that stood out to you?
No, I don't think so. And I was looking at the schedule for the rest of the games tonight. I mean, there's only a handful, but you mentioned at the top of the segment how the Bears are going to be in East Rutherford for the Giants game. Definitely excited to see how Daniel Jones plays in week two. And then we got Bills at the Panthers and Dolphins at the Buccaneers. So it's time to see your boy Jameis.
Yeah, we'll see how Jameis does. And also we'll continue to see that battle for the starting quarterback position in Miami between Ryan Fitzpatrick and Josh Rosen, which will be an intriguing storyline to be following tonight. All those things going on. Obviously, if you're crazy for NFL action, you got three games on Friday of NFL preseason action. You've got five on Saturday, and then you've got two more on Sunday and one more on Monday. So several different days in a row of NFL preseason action. We'll see exactly how all that goes. Fantastic fun with you this week. Can't wait to start the college football opening weekend. Really, we'll officially be there on Monday. Thanks for hanging with us. Have a good weekend. And go subscribe and rate our podcast. This has been OutKick, the coverage.